Blog Talk Radio.
Host Merle Exit. Oh yes. Well, let's see. I always tell you about the weather here. It's cloudy. I understand. I'm in New York City here. It's going to be raining for days again. Fortunately, I haven't had the flooding, but I'm not interested in the rain. But well, we have some bright things to talk about on my show. First of all, we're going back to California again, to Santa Rosa. We're going to talk with Executive Chef Brian Anderson of Bistro 29 for some French flair. And then there's a new Broadway-bound show out there called Chick Six, and they'll be performing at Queens Theater in the Park at Flushing Meadow Corona Park in New York City. And Lourdes Lane, the composer and star of this musical, will be telling us all about it. And of course, you know that I have to have the sponsor talk, and I'm sure my the chickens will be here. Hello, Esther. All right, we're here. Okay, they're here. Okay, here's a word from our sponsor.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yeah, and you can get these wonderful brownies by going to www.brownies.com. Okay, so, well, now let's go and talk about a little food. Our little French food. Let's click this. And okay, there we have Brian. Are you there?
I am indeed. Thanks, Merle.
Did you hear about the brown? You must have heard my brownie about the brownies.
Yeah, they sound delicious.
They are. Well, okay. No one has topped them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do with the brownies. No one can make a brownie like they do. Anyway.
No, sound good.
But what are we talking about? I want to talk about the cuisine that you do and how you came up with the type of cuisine at Bistro 29, and then we'll get into why you even call it Bistro 29.
Okay. Well, you know, the cuisine that we do here is we try to do a lot of typical Breton regional cuisine, which Brittany is in the northwest of France. And they are typically known for their buckwheat crepes. And so we try to stick with doing a lot of buckwheat crepes. We do a lot of seafood. Not a lot of seafood, but we do a fair amount of seafood. Some of our preparations come from that region also, or typically of that region. And an indicative of that that area is it's the 29th Department. So my wife comes from that area, and that's why we got the name Bistro 29, because it's an homage to her family, if you will.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Was it she who pushed you on this cuisine? I mean, what were you doing prior to this?
Prior to this, I raced bicycles in France for a couple of years, and I met my wife there. And my downfall to racing bikes was that I like to eat more than I like to ride my bike. And so I come from a family that had a fair amount of eating in their background. My grandma was a chef, if you will, for about 30 years at a boys' penitentiary for about 600 youths, and she cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner 6 days a week. So I got into, you know, food because of her. She's a short, you know, heavyset Italian woman, cooked Italian food, made her own gnocchi, ravioli, all that kind of thing. But then when I went to France, I fell in love with the food there. And my mother-in-law, who was a stay-at-home mother, you know, she would cook, do the traditional French thing, wake up in the morning, you know, eat breakfast, clean up, go buy, you know, the stuff for lunch, prep lunch, everybody would come home, clean up, prep dinner, start doing dinner. And I lived with my wife's family for a couple months at the end of one cycling season, and watched my mother-in-law cook and got into it even more. And so when I came back to California after that, decided to, you know, take a class at our local junior college and got into cooking.
So, and I'm curious, so when you take a class, what is it that was taught to switch you from cooking in your kitchen to opening up a restaurant?
Well, you know, they have here in Santa Rosa, there's a junior college, and they have a nice program, the culinary program here. Now it's developed a lot more than it was when I went in 96, I guess it was. Now they have, you know, you can get a full certificate. It's like a culinary school, if you will. At the time, it was called Introduction to Professional Cookery. So the class that I took, so they taught you, you know, the mise en place and all the different, you know, egg cookery, meat cookery, fish cookery. But it was a short six-month class that dealt with everything, kind of an overview, kind of got you interested. I thought that I would continue with the schooling, but I thought I should try to work in a restaurant before I continued doing so. And then once I got into the industry, it became difficult to get out and go back to school. So I've been doing it for about, whatever, 17 years now, and, you know, it's just a passion.
Oh, so in other words, so after the class you said, I'm ready to open up my own restaurant?
Oh, well, no, not exactly. I've only had the restaurant for 3.5 years. So I went and worked, you know, started doing breakfast because that's, you know, traditionally you have to start low. So I started doing breakfast, moved on to a nicer place up in Hillsburg area, worked there for a year and a half. Then I came over to actually the same exact spot where I'm at now, which was a previous restaurant. It's been restaurants in many incarnations, but one of the restaurants I worked at for 7.5 years was the sous chef. And when I left there, I went out to another restaurant out in Guerneville and became the chef and was a chef there for 4 years, and then decided, you know, at that point, this space became available. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
So in other words, and once you did that, got that, then you, like, kind of sat down and said, well, here's, now that I'm cooking on my own. In other words, the restaurant you worked at prior to this, you said a sous chef?
Yeah. Well, I was chef out at Applewood Inn, and before that I was sous chef here at the same spot.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, prior to that, were you cooking a different cuisine?
At Applewood, I kind of came up with my own style, of course. You know, here when I was at what was Cafe Lolo's at the time, you know, we did California cuisine, so it had an influence of some French cuisine on it too, you know. When I went out to Applewood, I kind of went more towards the French influence, but still kind of California, using, you know, a lot of local stuff. We had a huge garden out at the inn, so it was great to use, you know, stuff right out of the garden and think of things daily. You know, we changed our menu frequently. When I came to open my own place, one thing I always wanted was a crêperie, because when I lived in France in the Northwest, my wife's town of, you know, 18,000 people, I think, had probably 24 crêperies in it, quite popular in the area. One summer, actually, we went on vacation, and my in-laws got me as a little present, a 3-day class at a crêperie. So that's where I really learned how to do crepes in the traditional method. A lot of people in, you know, in America don't know buckwheat as a traditional crepe. They think of a all-purpose flour crepe as the crepe that you would use for anything. Yeah, my mother-in-law would kill me if I went and used all-purpose flour for a savory crepe, you know, because that's not traditional in that area. So when I thought of opening a restaurant, I thought, you know, what better to do than do a creperie? But creperies, you know, they need a lot of turnover for to run to make a business as a creperie work.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought was, you know, have one side of our menu is crepes, the other side of our menu is traditional kind of bistro cuisine, you know, with a little upscale, I'd say, from a normal traditional bistro.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So let me just ask you, like, how do you find, in terms of the taste, how would you describe the difference then between when you're making a, you know, white flour crepe or a buckwheat crepe?
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of people tend to first turn their noses up at buckwheat because they're so used to buckwheat pancakes, and buckwheat pancakes tend to be dense and heavy and, you know, just not as appealing. The buckwheat crepe gives an earthiness to it. We use a bit of gray sea salt in it, Breton sea salt in it also, which tends to add a little bit of a nice salty, you know, balance with the earthiness and then whatever you're putting inside of it. Traditionally in a buckwheat crepe, the garnish is kind of the, as we call the filling, you know, it is to enhance the flavor of the crepe, but it's not to overpower the crepe. So it should really be a thin amount of filling inside of the crepe. And ours, you know, we use a little butter on the, what we call the bilique or the griddle for the crepe maker. And so it adds a nice, you know, buttery richness, the saltiness, the earthiness from the crepe. And then, for example, one of our more popular crepes is a mushroom foistier, which has mushrooms, cream, thyme, shallots, white wine, all reduced down, and that's put in with some Gruyere cheese. And so, you know, you have the fatty, the salty, the earthiness, and all that, and they all work really good together. And they're bit crispy on the edges.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I had was the mushroom, the wild mushrooms.
We use a cremini in it. You know, sometimes I've used the wild. But, you know, I actually find for a greater mushroom flavor and more traditional as it is, you know, they use a champignon de Paris, you know, which is basically a white button mushroom, you know. So we kind of stick with that just to give it that real intense mushroom flavor as opposed to going with a chanterelle or something that, you know, kind of would be lost in such a preparation.
Okay. Well, this is time now that we go into what I ate, which is, I want to say, since this was in June,
yeah.
I was there, and people, in case people go on to the menu, you're not going to see this. I happen to have a copy of the menu that I took with me. So let's go. I want to go into, if we can go into a good description of the particular thing. So let's start with the seared goat cheese, and how do you spell it? Croton.
Croton. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
What we do is we have a local goat cheese producer out here. It's Redwood Hill Farms goat cheese, and they do a really nice goat cheese, and it's, you know, about 5 miles away from our restaurant. We buy these, and they come in like a 3-ounce little cylinder shape, and we cut them on the round. So the exposed side, we put on a really hot crepe maker. And as the cheese melts, the natural sugars in it caramelize. And so it almost creates a crust that expands out as if you're making like a Parmesan crisp or something like that. And then we kind of scrape it off. And so the one side of the cheese is warm and it's nice caramelized crust. And the other side is slightly cool and, you know, has that structure to it, and we put that over a endive and grilled peach salad with some hazelnuts, and we use a little Banyuls vinaigrette, which vinegar is made from Banyuls wine, which is like a fortified wine from the south of France. So again, that has a heavy alcohol content in the vinegar, so we tame it down with a little bit of honey. And then we drizzle a little honey on the plate, too, to go with the cheese. And it's it makes a good combination. It's something that I've had on, actually, at the restaurant that I worked before. I started doing it there, and I brought it over here. And it's one of the mainstays of our menu. It never comes off.
Oh, good.
We change it. We change the fruit for seasonality. Like right now, it has pear, grilled pear on it because pears are in season.
That's what I had, grilled pear. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you also have a sort of a take on onion soup.
Yes, my and that actually comes more from my wife's side of the family because my wife's grandfather was. Too young for the First World War and too old for the Second World War. And so he ended up as a youngster driving a truck that sold, they were called Johnnies. They drove trucks and sold onions and garlic out of a truck on the coast of France and in England. And they made a soup called Soup de Johnny, which was a French onion soup, French onion soup, basically. But we took it kind of towards the Breton area and started using cider instead of cognac or brandy to deglaze the pan with. And we also do it as a vegetarian dish. So we use veg stock as opposed to beef broth. But with the cider and the sugar in the cider, it kind of caramelizes as it cooks down and it becomes rich. And most people tend to think that it actually has beef or chicken stock or some kind of, you know, protein in it like that. And then instead of using your standard croutons, we take buckwheat crepes, which, you know, we dice up and then we fry them and they get like a crispy little chip. And we put those in as our crouton with Gruyere on top, put that under the salamander and get it nice and bubbly and serve it that way. And it's it seems to be another nice seller. It's another one of the mainstays of our menu that never comes off.
Next on the list is the, you'll pronounce it, dobe?
Oh, the dobe. Dobe of beef, yes.
Of beef, yeah.
Yeah, and dobe, you know, in France, you can't just call something a braised piece of meat. You know, if you have mushrooms and lardons in it, then it would be bourguignon. If you have, you know, something, if you have onions and beer, it would be carbonade. In France, if you do it with just wine, straight wine and a little aromatics and braise it, that's called the dobe. And so what we do is we use a nice chuck flap meat, which is a really nice marbled piece of meat. It comes off the chuck. We do a nice big, probably about a 9 to 10 ounce piece, and we sear it off nicely, put it in a pan with some onion, garlic, thyme, juniper berry, bay leaf, salt, pepper, and cover it with red wine, and then we braise it for about 6 hours or so. And so it's really tender. Let it cool down a little bit. Take it out of the wine. Strain out the liquid. And when serving it, you know, we reduce that down. It creates a nice sauce on it. And I think we were serving that at the time with a Sao George potato puree.
Yeah, it says Sierra Rose potato puree. That's what
yeah.
I said.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had the sauce with it.
And caramelized baby turnips and grilled spring onion.
Yeah, that's right, because at the time we had some really nice baby turnips, so we were doing those with a little bit of butter and then a little chicken stock on there to kind of give them a nice little glaze and then, you know, toastiness to them. So they were delicious.
So these are turnips that were taken away from its mother very early.
Yeah.
People complain, you know, this thing with pita.
Yeah.
How many baby vegetables have been taken away from its mother, and no one complains about that?
Yeah.
You notice? Okay, the next on the list, we got
good
the
one.
Seared duck breast.
Yeah, oh, the seared duck breast.
Dry spatzle. Tell us about that. Oh, why is it that, tell me, why is it that duck, it's like no one wants to serve it well done. Why duck, and why is it okay to have duck not well done, as opposed to like you can have chicken?
I think in the wild, if you get a wild duck and shoot and you go hunting, I think you want to cook it well done because you know you're not sure what that duck was eating and whatnot. I'm not sure what the difference is of why, you know, you could have duck rare and you can't have, you know,
chicken rare,
which, you know, I don't think there's a problem anymore with salmonella or anything like that. I guess it's just the way that the ducks are raised and what they're eating. But, yeah, and our duck, we get, it's again, it's another local company, and we use the duck breast. You know, we sear that nicely, get a nice sear on, let it rest, and then we were doing it with a rye spätzle. So that's just, you know, that's again, it's not from Brittany, but that's kind of, you know, a cuss between Alsace and, you know, and the German.
Well, when you say rye spätzle, as in other words, as opposed to using wheat flour, using rye flour to make the spätzle, is that what?
Yeah, we're using rye flour. It adds a little bit of like a, you know, I find that duck, you know, and spice kind of go nicely together. Spices being, you know, like the salt, like the warm spices of clove or nutmeg and that, or star anise and that kind of a thing. And to me, when I taste rye flour, it always reminds me of some of warm spices like that. I also, at the time, we were serving it with some really nice cherries, fresh cherries.
Yeah, cherry, rye, whiskey, reduction, and wild arugula.
Yeah, so we
salad.
Yeah, so we took the rye and put it in there, and then we took rye whiskey, you know, rye, and reduced that down with a little gastrique of shallots, brown sugar, and then and some clove, nutmeg, salt, pepper, and then added chicken demi to it, and reduced that down to make a sauce, which kind of is a little sweet, but it has some of the like I say, the warm spices in it, which go nicely with the spätzle, which go nicely with the cherries, and they kind of all worked, I believe, harmoniously.
Now, then there poses the question of what's the difference between wild arugula and tamed arugula?
Yeah, well, you know, here in California, we have two different kinds. There's the bigger leaf, you know, which kind of looks like you're, you know, everybody's used to of arugula. It has the roundy, more rounded edges. With the wild arugula, it's not necessarily wild. It's not picked out in the wild, but it's the type of arugula. So it has the more jagged edges, smaller leaf.
Yes.
It would look like something that maybe you'd see on your lawn.
I get that at Trader Joe's. They
yeah.
They sell at wild arugula. And
that's
nice
arugula. It's a little more peppery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you arugula, if you taste it on its own, you taste the peppery.
Yeah.
When you're adding it to something, you don't longer taste the peppery. You taste the flavor, but not the peppery anymore. That's what
I
find.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Okay. And then the last of the entree is a brick roasted spring, in parentheses, chicken and with
Well, we say we put the parentheses around it because
quotes, we
do it. It's a Poussin, but a Poussin we found when we wrote Poussin on the menu, people tended to think it was poisson, which would be fish.
So
we kept having many people getting chicken and going, well, what is this? You know, and they didn't really understand. So we had to change it off. So spring chicken being, you know, it put the quotes around it being that it's a young chicken, you know, like you're no spring chicken.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, I'm not, that's for sure.
So we do it, you know, we don't want to say Poussin anymore because it just kind of threw people off. But it's a young chicken. I think it's, a maximum of 4 weeks old, I believe. So they're about an 18-ounce little chicken. We butterfly it open, put a brick on top of it, and roast it in the oven so the skin gets nice little crispiness to it. And then we take it out and we deglaze the pan with some chicken demi that we make here and then a little bit and some chopped tarragon butter and reduce that down, season it nicely. And that goes over the chicken. And I believe at the time we were using some Brussels sprouts with it underneath there, and we caramelize those. They'll half them and caramelize them in some butter, hit them with a little lemon juice, salt and pepper, garlic, and put those underneath the chicken. And then we always do we make our own fries here at the restaurant. So, of course, we use a Kennebec potato that we slice and blanch, and then we refry those. And when we serve them with the chicken, we put a little bit of truffle oil on them and toss them with that, so we call them a truffled pommes frites.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So now I just want people to know that aside from the crepes, like in terms of like in terms of dessert, that
yeah.
you have like the sweet crepes, and you have a whole variety of things that you could put in the crepe. You also have some other type of desserts. By
yeah.
the way, you make your own ice cream?
We do. We make right now. Let's see, we have a bergamot mint ice cream, a salted caramel ice cream, vanilla ice cream, and a tarragon blood orange ice cream. And then we have 3 sorbets. We do a cassis sorbet, raspberry sorbet, and a blackberry sorbet right now.
So it says that you have homemade ice cream. So who's home?
Well, house made, you know. Made in the restaurant. Hey, let's not go there, okay?
So tell me, so let's get into some of the other desserts, because I had some desserts. First of all, I had there was some piece of chocolate cake I had because it was my birthday.
Yes. And
what
that's what we call a fondant. So it's basically a really dense, rich. I mean, it's like basically equal amounts of butter and chocolate with 2 parts of sugar and then eggs and then for one cake, it has 2 tablespoons of flour just to help stabilize it. But it's basically almost like a flourless chocolate cake. We warm it up so it gets really nice and kind of soft and easy to eat. And we serve that with our salted caramel ice cream. So we use a little bit of, again, the gray Breton sea salt in the ice cream, which
mm-hmm.
causes it to give that little, you know, help bring out the flavors of both the cake and the ice cream.
And in terms of the chocolate, by the way, what are you using, chocolate from France, or what kind
of
chocolate?
No, actually, we have a local chocolate company here in San Francisco, which is about an hour away from us, and it's called Cho. It's T-C-H-O is how they spell it, and it's an organic, all-natural, you know, really nice chocolate that they're doing out of there, and they have different levels of chocolate and stuff. So.
Well, that's interesting. In other words, are they getting the taking the cocoa beans and making the chocolate from the cocoa
beans?
Yeah,
they're processing it right over on one of the piers in San Francisco, actually.
Oh, really? Okay, I guess we'll have to go to San Francisco and check that one out.
Yeah, it's really fun.
They
do tours and everything.
Yeah, I haven't had that one. I've had like Schaffenberger and some of the others. But that's interesting. When I get out to San Francisco, I'll check that one out.
Yeah.
Or at the next chocolate show here in New York City in November.
Yeah. They're becoming very popular, especially around the area. And they do, you know, we use a 68.5% cocoa, you know,
uh-huh.
product in ours. So it's really nice.
And then you make beignets.
We do.
Is that what I had?
You had the beignets. Our beignets are a little bit different. Traditionally, they'd be called a pet de nun, but translation would not be nice to say. But it's that's why we don't call it that. It would be a nun's fart. But we call it because they're supposed to be light and airy. So we call
uh-huh.
them beignets. We use a traditional pate à choux or choux paste dough that we then just cut into rectangles and fry, and they get nice and puffy. And, you know, we do a nice powdered sugar, you know, dollop on there. And then we were doing a strawberry strawberry coulis or a strawberry, you know, syrup and then a little whipped cream with it. And, again, those are something that we have most of the time, and we'll just change the fruit accordingly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, okay, so you got a website. The website.
We do. We're at bistro29.com. So it's bistro29.com. And our menu changes all the time, but our menu up there is a sample menu. We try to put some of our other things that happen throughout the week or year. We do $29 special on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, which is a 4-course meal for $29. We start off with a little mousse bouche and then usually kind of a warm salad or a salad or warm app, an entree, and then a dessert for $29. And we also could pair that with 2 4-ounce pours of wine for $11 more. So for $40, you could have 4 courses plus 2 glasses of wine.
Wow, that's really great. And for those
yeah.
who don't know what an mousse bouche is,
it's just a little bite to kind of wet your palate for what's to come. So, you know, for example, this week we're doing a little, we're taking one of our crepes and we cut a small little, like, 3-inch diameter round of a crepe, and then we fill it with a little ratatouille, for example, and Gruyere. And so when you get that as your first little course, you can pick it up, pop it in your mouth, and that kind of gets you going for what else is coming later.
So in other words, in a mousse bouche should always be something that's like a one-bite thing.
Yeah, exactly, you know,
or
one or maybe two at the most.
Yeah, because many times when that's served, it's a lot of times like you'll get something on a spoon.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Not like a regular spoon. It's always on a ceramic-type spoon kind of thing for you to eat.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
sometimes
they'll
use an Asian soup spoon, something like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I so appreciate your calling in and telling us about this. And when I finally get to dealing with writing about Santa Rosa, which will be, that's next on the list. I finished Mendocino County.
Well,
so now, yeah, so I'm now up to Santa Rosa. But the blog is up. So if you want to look at the blog, and I have all the photos, so I got that. So, you know, that'll give plenty of information, including what I ate. So that's good. That's a good thing.
Well, thank you very much, Merle.
Sure, and have a glass of wine for me.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, bye. Right.
Bye.
Oh, that certainly can make me hungry. I don't know about you. But, yep, that, yes. So, well, while I'm waiting, let's see, for Lourdes to call in, when you hear those little beep stuff, so it's like somebody's trying to call me on my phone here, but I don't answer the phone. So, how about, I'm going to play one call. It's Misfit. And here it is.
You say that I'm the one, the girl of your dreams, and you call me pretty. How about that? Now ain't this fun? You don't remember me. You don't see the misfit that you laughed at. How about that?
Part of it to me. Well, okay. Well, that's we're still waiting for the call. I hate to interrupt by I hate to interrupt by putting in a different song. But okay, so let me just kind of get tell you also what's going on. I went to see a show called VOCA, V-O-C-A. Best thing to do is just Google it. I'll try to explain what this show was about. There are seven, eight, something like that. I don't have, I don't put anything in front of me. Anyway, there are eight people in the cast. They're all dressed in white, with white hoods, and they're from another planet. And it seems as if the plot, because there's really no plot, but the, if you want to call it plot, is that they come to Earth, and they don't speak, they speak, none of our languages. They speak, from outer space language. And so I guess they're trying to find a way to communicate, and they learn to communicate through singing. And so the group, what they do, they sing a cappella, or as we say in Yiddish, a cappella. They sing a cappella, and some of the performers actually use their voice to make it sound like percussion or, that kind of thing, backup. That there is no band, nothing like that. And so that's kind of the thing. And they're doing all varieties of singing, but it's not that you're just standing there and just singing. They also come out to the audience and play with different people, bringing them up on the stage and stuff like that. It's a very, very funny show. And it's considered off-Broadway in New York City. It's off-Broadway because of the size. Well, I'm going to answer this call. So in the meantime, what I'm going to do is going to play a song and answer this call. I was young and
their voices were soft and their words inviting. There was a time when love was blind and the world was a song, and the song was exciting. There was a time, then it all went wrong.
Caller. It's always great when you have, I know. Oh, I see. It's interesting. Of who's handling Chick 6. I have two different people that are handling Chick 6. Anyway. I hate when this happens. You know, when people are scheduled to call in, and then they don't, and they confirm, and it's like, okay, it's 3:42, so rather than try to fill up the airtime, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to end the episode early, and and give these people a call, or their PR people, and find out. Anyway, I can't, I haven't seen the show, and I can't recommend it, but I will end this. This is just one more song here, their finale, and then after that I'll end.
There was a broken girl who found her world crushed down without reason. Though a heart can break, the song still stays. She pushed through a new season.
I did that as well. Just give me a piece. Okay. All right. Then I'm just going to end this here. Of course, I wish they would, I said send me the CD. They just sent me pieces. Anyway, so I'm ending the show. Going on another press trip. I'm going to be going to Alton, Illinois, and then across the way to St. Louis, Missouri. And when I get back, then I'll do another show. So for now, have a good day, evening, or wherever. And hey, go eat.